Fly by Night by Frances Harding, read by Leslie Sharp. Prelude. History for the housefly.
But names are important, the nursemaid protested.
Yes, said Quilliam Mai. So is accuracy.
What's half an hour, though? No one will know she wasn't born until after sunset. Just think, born on the day of Goodman Boniface, a child of the sun. You could call her Aurora, or Selina, or Beemabeth. Lots of lovely names for a daughter of the sun.
True, but irrelevant. After dusk, that calendar day is sacred to Goodman Palpitattle, he who keeps flies out of jams and butter churns. Quilliam Mai looked up from his desk and met the nursemaid's gaze. My child is a bluebottle, he said firmly. The nursemaid's name was Celery Dunnock. She was born on a day sacred to Cramflick, she who keeps the vegetables of the garden crisp. Celery had every reason to feel strongly on the matter of names. Her eyes were pale, soft and moist, like skinned grapes, but at the moment they were stubborn, resolute grapes. Quilliam Mai had a most meticulous brain. His thoughts were laid out like the strands of a feather, and a single frond out of place, he felt like a tear in his mind. His eyes were dark and vague, like smoked glass. The twin grapes looked into the smoked glass and saw a mind full of nothing they could understand. Call it Mosca and have done with it, Mai said. Mosca was a rather old-fashioned name for a flyborn, but better than Buzzletrees or Caddis. He returned his attention to the task of writing his treatise. It was a history of the times in which he, and now his infant daughter, lived. It was entitled The Shattered Realm, a full and clear account of our kingdom of rags and tatters. The door closed behind Celery, and Mai was dimly aware that the level of annoyance in the room had diminished. He was alone, but no, he was not alone. From the wall, a pair of eyes watched him. At the moment, they were blue, but one of them already showed a peppery speckle which told Mai that one day they would be as black as his own. The nursemaid had bound the baby in swaddling clothes as tight as an acorn in its cup, so that it could not learn to be wrigglesome. When the baby was nothing but a linen cocoon with a surprised little head peeking out, she had strapped it to a board to give it a nice straight back. The board was hung from a hook on the wall to keep it out of the way. For the last month, for all the attention Mai had paid to it, the suspended baby might have been a picture hung upon the wall, albeit a picture whose eyes followed one around the room. Now, however, it had a name, and names were important. Mai was suddenly sorry that the girl would not have green eyes like her dead mother. If he had thought about this for another moment, he might have regretted spending so much time among his books, writing of the fates of nations, while those green eyes were still open. However, he very sensibly caught himself in time and decided to think about something else. But what would he do now that his sight was weakening? He had always thought that in years to come, dear Jessamine would help him with his papers. Those wide, pepper-speckled eyes watching from the wall. What a pity the child was a girl and not a boy to be schooled. Well, you will have to do. If you had died along with your mother, I would have taught the cat to read. Mai felt a brief qualm at the idea of turning his daughter into a freak by teaching her letters, but it could not be helped. The baby watched as he stooped over his manuscript once more and picked up the quill. The study was so quiet and lonely, snug and sealed like a ship's cabin against the rain-blasted world. Once, while he still lived in the city of Mandalayan, Mai had longed for such quiet, an escape from the distractions of horse clatter and hawker cry. His exile to the remote village of Chuff had left him weary of stillness and the dismal, eternal trickle of water outside his window. Mai laid down his quill again. He had no idea how to speak to a baby. He had no stories for children.